Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Buckner, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this intro before the intro of our Today's Boondoggle radio show. As you know, we're a veteran-owned and operated podcast, and this has been an incredibly therapeutic journey for me as a veteran that struggles with PTSD and anxiety, just getting out and talking to people. But it does cost us some money, so if you feel so obliged to donate to our GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe under Today's Boondoggle. We also have a Venmo at Today's Boondoggle that you can donate to. Our anchor sponsorship at anchor.fm/Today's Boondoggle. Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, you can email us at todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. And please follow us on our social media sites at Today's Boondoggle on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all your social media platforms, as well as our YouTube channel, our Rumble channel, and our BitChute channel. Please follow, subscribe, comment, and download. And please consider checking out our sponsors. If you support our sponsor, Dream Nutrition, you can receive 10% off your order by using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. So Dream Nutrition, they're a veteran-owned and operated company as well. So please support them and receive 10% off using the promo code BOONDOG10. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening.
Sonic Temple Art and Music Festival is back at historic Crew Stadium in Columbus, Ohio, with the Foo Fighters, Tool, Avenged Sevenfold, Kiss, plus Godsmack, Rob Zombie, Deftones, Queens of the Stone Age, and more. Memorial Day weekend. Passes are on sale now at sonictemplefestival.com for only $10 down.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with Today's Boondoggle. And real quick housekeeping note, if you are watching us on YouTube or if you're watching us on Rumble or BitChute and Odyssey, please hit that follow and subscribe button. Also, if you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, all that good stuff, please hit that follow and subscribe button. Help us bring our numbers up so we can continue to bring you conversations like the one we're about to have today, talking with my good friend, Mr. Matt Mingus of the band Dance Gavin Dance. What's going on, Matt?
Yeah. Nothing much, man. Happy to be here. You know, we've been talking about doing this for probably over a year now, so it's nice to finally make it happen and get on here with you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, we see each other often, kind of like this, but we don't. We've been meaning to talk more about music and your background and stuff like that. So glad we're able to do it. You've been pretty busy though, so you know, just kind of got back into the States again, which I want to get into and everything with you. But real quick, when I have somebody on for the first time, I like to get a quick background. So do you remember originally what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, there's this ongoing joke in my family. In preschool, we had to, like, when we graduated, everyone had to hold up signs, you know, of what they want to be when they grow up. And I shit you not, I got up there and I held up my sign and I told everyone that I want to work the streets. But what I meant was I wanted to be a construction worker. But the way it came out, you know, the 4-year-old me, I said, I want to work the streets. So My parents always still to this day talk about that. So, and then beyond that, you know, as far as I can remember, like my actual own memories, I wanted to be a musician. I started playing at a really young age when I was 9. And from then on, that's just like what I dreamed of doing, was playing music.
Nice. And do you remember like what it was that kind of like, you know, first like attracted you to music? Like, how'd you discover it?
Well, my parents, that, you know, they I always thought they had good musical taste growing up. And they like going to concerts and stuff. And then I had my older sister, who is, you know, at the time when I was, she's about 15 years older than me. I'd have to do the math, but somewhere around there. So when I was really young, you know, she was in high school and she was all into that, like the grunge scene, and she turned me on to Nirvana and Bush. Those were some of her favorite bands. And then my brother-in-law, who she started dating when she was in high school, he played guitar, and he's the one who really turned me on to, you know, like the Deftones and Far and like heavier music. I grew up here in Sacramento, so hence the influence from the Deftones and Far. You know, that was all big in the scene over here. And
what that attracted you to drums?
I wanted to be in the school band. And I remember one morning I was walking by the multi-purpose room, and this was in like second grade, so you couldn't be in band until you were in third grade. I remember walking by the multi-purpose room and heard the band playing the Mission Impossible theme song, and I was like, damn, that's nice. Cool, I want to do that. And so I waited, and then when it was finally time for me to join, I, you know, had to decide what instrument I was going to play. And it was either between, I think I wanted to play either saxophone or drums and percussion. And I mean, when you're a young kid, a little delinquent like I was, drums seemed much more fun. So I went with that. And then I picked up guitar, and I got super into guitar. And I always played drums and percussion in school band, but outside of that, I played guitar, and I always envisioned myself playing guitar in a band, in like a rock band. So it's kind of funny how it worked out, and I ended up just playing drums. But
yeah, I mean, so this was like third grade or something. I think when I was in kindergarten, they only let us touch like the recorder or something, you know, and that was enough. That's great. You guys had it so young, you know.
I remember learning Hot Cross Buns on the recorder.
Yeah, exactly. But like drums and anything else, I don't think they let us. We started getting into until like junior high or whatever. But that's wild. That's a good. Well, would you say Sacramento is more like about the arts and music as well?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of it. I grew up, you know, in the suburbs of Sacramento, a little south of it, in the city of Elk Grove, which was back then still somewhat of a cow town, and a little more rural. Now it's not. It's like one of the fastest growing cities, and it's super suburban now. But yeah, I'd say there's all the schools had a lot of really excellent programs, you know, depending on what you wanted to do. And music was one of them. And especially like you mentioned, you know, in junior high, that's when like my band program experience like really took off, and you know, being more involved in the different bands like concert band and jazz band, and competing, our schools would compete in competitions and all sorts of stuff like that. That carried on to high school for me too.
And then, I mean, you mentioned some of the bands that, like Deftones and stuff from the area, but when you started playing out, what was the scene like over there?
You know, we've always had a really good local music scene here since I was a kid. So there used to be this coffee shop down the street from my house, my parents' house. It was called the Sweet Bean Cafe, and all the local bands would play there. And my first local band show was this band called 3 Weeks Yesterday, and they're like pop punk. And so, and I thought that shit was tight. And so then I went through a little phase of like really being into pop punk and the local pop punk scene. And, that was like definitely a thing here.
Nice.
But I wasn't too picky though. Those were the times where I would just show up knowing that a band was going to play and not even know who I was going to be seeing, and just go in and watch the show and, you know, sometimes like it and sometimes not.
That's awesome. And then, so in high school, when did you start like forming your own bands to start playing out?
The first band that I formed was in eighth grade. And we were called Votality. And, I started playing with this group of guys, and we were a band for like 2 years maybe. And we'd play at all the local spots, and, that's when I like really, really got into it and fell in love with it, and realized that, you know, it was possible, you know, my dream could become a reality, you know, if I work hard enough and keep at it.
And then when did Dance Gavin Dance form?
That was in 2005. I was 16 at the time. So I think I was a sophomore in high school. Maybe I was a junior. Actually, yeah, I was a junior in high school. And that was kind of funny, the early stages of the band, because we'd like jam and practice and just play for like our girlfriends at our practice studio and stuff.
Well, you guys all kind of have known each other from high school, or you guys all?
No, actually, more so from just like the local music scene. So, our guitar player, Will Swan, him and I met because, we crossed paths before, but we really met because our two separate bands, after I was in that band called Votality, I started another band called Left Apart, and we shared a practice studio with Will's old band called Farewell Unknown, and they were like kind of like a pop punk band. They had like a little bit of screaming, but it was more so pop punk. And so we shared a room together, and then they were having some issues with their drummer, and next thing I know, I was joining that band with Will. And then that only lasted a few months, and then we decided to just totally change it up and go pick up our new singer at the time, who was Johnny Craig. And Will knew Johnny because their bands had toured together. Because that's one of the reasons I joined Farewell Unknown, was because they had already like been on tour, and they were playing some of the more well-known venues in Sacramento at the time, like the Boardwalk. And so I wanted to, it was experience, looking back, right? Yeah. And it, you know, it was somewhat selfish, but I just so badly wanted to be a successful musician that I was kind of willing to do anything. So, you know, I left the band that I was in to join with Will, and next thing you know, I guess I sold my soul to the devil for rock and roll.
But like, obviously then you and Will have hit it off and bonded. And then, when did the Dance Gavin Dance become, you know, your thing?
So yeah, that was in 2005, and we started writing music immediately, and recorded an EP, and then next thing we know, we were getting hit up by a well-known manager in the area, and we started working with him, and then we got signed to Rise Records 2 years after we had formed in 2007.
Yeah, and like what I meant to ask too is like, so it's like you and Will kind of knew each other from the scene from crossover for other bands, but then how did the other members start coming in to the fold?
Meet them. You know, it's kind of funny. So let's see, our bass player at the time, Eric Lodge, he was in the band with Will. He was in Farewell Unknown. And then John Mess, our screamer, he... I knew him completely separate. I got into recovery at a really young age, you know. I and I'm sure we'll get more into this later, but I got turned on, you know. I went into rehab when I was like 15, and I that's actually when I met John Mess, was through recovery. And I knew him separately. And the next thing I know, he was friends with Will. It was just so, like, looking back on it, it's so weird how everything worked out, you know? And then next thing you know, we're in a band together. And it was kind of crazy. So, and then, yeah. And then we always had second guitar players coming and going. And so it took a while to get one locked in for those first few years.
Now, when you guys first started, were you just with one vocalist and then went on to use two, or?
No, we immediately started with John and Johnny Craig.
Okay. And then, so you said you guys got discovered with Rise, went on Rise Records at the beginning, and that was that still before you finished high school this all happened?
Yeah, I was still in high school, and when I signed my first record contract, because I wasn't 18 yet, my dad had to sign it, and...
And he actually read it and was like, what are you doing?
No, what's funny is, it's probably incriminating of me to say this, but I forged his signature on the contract. And he knew. I asked him if I could, and he's like, "Yeah, do it." My parents, I'm lucky. My parents have always been super supportive of me doing the music thing. So he forged it, and Rise, they fucking knew too. And actually, Craig, who doesn't own Rise anymore, but you know, we still keep in touch. He still has that contract that I forged when I was
nice,
so young. And so yeah, so we went.
It's gotta end up in the Rock Hall someday.
Hell yeah. And so on our first tour that we ever went on, I was still in high school, and I brought a packet of work that I was supposed to complete while I was on the road, and I totally didn't, of course. I was on tour.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just immediately jumped into this shit like at a really young age.
But then, you know, you come back from your first tour and that experience, and probably big man at the high school, you know, but how were your teachers with, you know, finishing after taking that packet out?
They were cool, man. You know, I ended up my junior year of high school. I was one of those kids. I was kind of just done with school at a young age. You know, I wasn't dumb. I wasn't bad. I just was like, all right, I'm ready to be in the world. So I ended up going to a continuation high school, it's called, and or an alternative
early or whatever.
Yeah. And then it was only 3 hours a day. And I ended up graduating 6 months early still, even though I went on tour, and my teachers were hella supportive of me doing music, and everyone was cool with me going on tour, and they made it work and worked with me as much as they could, you know, and I'm super grateful for that.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's cool that your parents were so supportive too, because a lot of, you know, I've heard so many stories of, you know, parents just like, no, you get a college education first, you know, or something, have a backup plan. And you kind of just, you know, went with it. And I mean, here we are, 2023, you guys have accomplished so much during your time, but let's talk about the ups and the downs since like finishing high school and then going out in a touring band where, you know, I think we had talked one time when you were in town, you know, about the van days, you know, and,
oh yeah,
you know, let's talk a little bit about the van days. And then were there ever any times where you're just like, man, did I make the right choice? Or,
oh yeah. Yeah. So we were in the van for a long time. Really for the first, 10 years of our career. Like the first tour, we didn't even have a trailer. We were just in a 15 passenger van, 7 of us in there with the gear crammed. And, it was gnarly, man. None of us really had any money, and we were eating off the dollar menu on a daily basis and sleeping on people's floors or sleeping in the van. And, at that time, I had started drinking and partying again. And so when we'd go on tour, we would just party, 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 and just get fucked up all the time. And, that was, unfortunately it got the best of me later on in my career, but, in the early years, I'm not going to lie. I mean, shit, it was fun. Like we had a great time. We didn't know any better. When we were doing that for so long, it did start to take a toll on me. And like you said, there were those moments where it was like, fuck, like, am I really going to do this like for the rest of my life? Like we just didn't really see the light at the end of the tunnel, but it was like, well, I'm doing what I fucking love to do. Like there's no question about that, but I'm not really making a living doing it. And, there are other guys that did leave the band because of that. And, I always kind of had the upper hand in that situation because I was the youngest. I was 3 years younger than everyone, so all these guys that are worrying about making these livings and doing all this, I'm like, oh shit, I'm still 19 years old, like whatever. There were hard times, and it was definitely challenging to make ends meet, but I just wanted it so bad, and I know so did our guitar player Will and I, and we just kept hammering it out until we went through several member changes, multiple singers, and then finally we started to get that respect, I guess you call it that, respect in the music scene, and people started to notice us and want to tour with us. But in the early years, like it was really hard to find bands to take us out on tour. And we ended up just headlining all the time and having to kind of build our own fan base up. And it paid off over the years. And now I'd say we have some of the most loyal fans, in the music scene, really, compared to a lot of bands. I feel loved by them, it's cool to look back and talk about these things and then see kind of where we're at now. And, it just makes me have a lot of gratitude, towards everything.
Yeah. I remember, when you guys played here at the Agora and I got to experience you for the first time, experience you guys playing live for the first time, and just the fans singing along and, You know, I mean, the Gore was, I think, sold out. It was packed, you know, and they're just, I could sense the love and out there with the crowd. I could feel that energy with you guys, man. And it was quite amazing. But, you know, when was it like, so, I mean, it's been like you and Will since day one. You guys have had a little, you know, revolving door members for a little bit, but when was it when you got this current connection, and do you feel you know, when was the point in your guys' career where you started, like you said, that noticing that respect and getting to play like bigger shows and getting the bigger following?
Yeah, so we ended up parting ways for the second time with Johnny Craig. I believe it was, I'm so bad with dates, I want to say it was 2013. And we had toured with this band called Tides of Man. And we reached out to they weren't really doing anything anymore. So we reached out to their singer, Tillian Pearson, and hit him up. And well, I should mention, actually, when we kicked out Johnny Craig for the second time, we were kind of on the verge of just throwing the hat in and being like, you know, like, we just can't make this work. Like, this isn't destined to happen, you know? But we were like, all right, one last hurrah. Let's see if this guy wants to be our singer, and take it from there. And we reached out, and he was interested. And he sent us over a demo of him singing over Lemon Meringue Tie. And we were like, oh, this is sick. All right, great. And I mean, the rest is history. He joined, and I'd say we wrote a record with him called Acceptance Speech. And after that album came out is when I'd say the tide started to turn, and people showed interest in our band again. But there, I think, was always a lot of people in the music industry and music fans that were like, oh, these guys, they change their lineup so often, like, this isn't gonna last, you know, and just kind of were almost rooting for us to fail. But, you know, we've been with the same lineup now for 10 years, minus, you know, a couple changes in guitar players, and obviously our bass player passing away. And but other than that, it's been the same core members of me, Will, John Mess, and Tillian Pearson. And I feel like, you know, everybody brings something to the table. And when we write music together, there's some magic happens, you know?
Yeah, I agree, man. When I saw that show, and, you know, like, Tillian definitely is like, you know, I mean, you leave seeing for the first time, he's definitely somebody that, like, you know, you're like, man, what's this guy's vocals doing in the middle of all this chaos, you know?
Yeah.
When he does the singing, you know, and it's just like, but it goes so well. He was such a part that I remember from that show, from that experience, you know? So definitely sounds like you found the right, you know, the right mix in there.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to get too much into this, but it was, you know, it was really challenging doing that tour at the end of last year without him while he was taking care of himself. And it was one of those reminders of how important he truly is to Dance Gavin Dance. And, you know, it's just not the same without him. So it's really nice having him back.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, so you guys, everything starts going well when you get this mix. You said the past 10 years, everybody's kind of been gelling, putting out albums, getting on bigger shows, starting to maybe play some festivals and being noticed out there. And then, you know, it got like you've already alluded to how, you know, what it ended up, you know, how it ended up affecting you. You want to talk about like kind of the highs and then that crash?
Yeah. I mean, I was just, like I said, you know, I got in and I just party, and it was really fun at the beginning, and then it just progressively kept getting worse and worse, as, you know, it does for a lot of I mean, for all drug addicts and alcoholics, and you know, the partying turned into not being fun anymore, and a lot of guys in the band were older now, so they grew out of that and weren't partaking anymore. And then here I am, still just, you know, acting like I'm this 21-year-old kid, and now I'm in my 30s, and it just wasn't cute anymore. And I used to go on tour and party and then come home and be able to turn it off and then come home and just be, you know, kind of normal. And that just, it just went away. It burnt out. So I'd go on tour and then I'd come home and then I'd act like I was still on tour and partying and getting blackout drunk all the time. And, you know, then I got introduced. I'm super open about this stuff, so, you know, I don't mind sharing. Then I just got really heavily into doing cocaine. And it got so bad that it was no longer a social thing, you know. I was doing it by myself at home and staying up for multiple days at a time and just losing my fucking mind. And what happened was the pandemic hit, and so our tour got canceled. There was seeming to be no hope for live music to ever come back for a while. And I just fell into this really dark place for that 2 years that everything was shut down. And in my mind, I was like, I knew it had gotten really bad, and I wanted help, and but I didn't know how to get out of it. So I, you know, just kind of circled around the drain for a bit. So then we got a tour booked, and it was the Afterburner tour. I saw the light at the end of the tunnel, and I thought that going on that tour was going to help pull me out of this dark place I had been in and give me that sense of purpose again that I felt like was missing from my life. And it really had the opposite effect. And I went on the tour, and now I didn't have my wife. I didn't have any responsibilities. I'm on tour again. And I just went batshit crazy and was just partying. And now my band was starting to get concerned, and they told me, you know, I need to chill out, and pulled me aside and had some, you know, talks with me, and I was in denial and like, what, fuck that, I can do whatever I want. And mind you know, I was always pretty good about staying sober to perform and then getting fucked up afterwards. And on this tour, that wasn't the case anymore. I was so deep in my disease of addiction that I couldn't even stay sober to perform. I was getting fucked up before the set. I wasn't playing good. And then finally, halfway through the tour, we were playing in Detroit at the Masonic Temple there. And I was coming off of like a 2 or 3 day bender, and I went to go do the meet and greet, and my bandmates were like, dude, no, you're not doing the meet and greet. You need to go get some sleep. Like, you're fucking up, basically, is what they said in some kinder words.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, something just clicked, and I was like, oh, fuck that. I could do whatever I want, fucked up. And don't you know who I am? This stupid fucking God complex that I somehow developed over time. Even though deep down inside I felt like such a piece of shit, I still tried to project that, you know, my ego was just out of control. And so I proceeded to get super fucked up on multiple different types of drugs and alcohol. And I went out to go play, and I couldn't physically play my drums. Like, I physically could not play. And they basically booted me off stage. And thank God my drum tech, who's a phenomenal drummer, hopped up and finished the set for me. But I went into the back in the green room, and I broke down. I lost it. I basically had a nervous breakdown. And I was crying. I was breaking shit. And I finally had that moment that was like, I don't want to die, and I'm going to die. I feel like I'm going to die. I feel like I want to die, but I don't want to, and I need help. And and I don't know how to do this alone. So because I had mentioned, you know, I went through rehab and was into recovery at an early age, I knew that there was hope. And so I made a phone call to our manager and to my wife, and I just told them what had happened, that I need help. And my manager reached out to an amazing, literal life-saving organization called Music Cares. And they were able to find me a bed in an inpatient rehab that next day. So that night, I basically tried to talk and come up with excuses of not why not to go. And then finally it was like, no, I got to do this. Like I have to. And thank God that my band members saw that I needed it, and they were worried, and they all love and care about me, and they allowed me to go take care of myself for the longevity of the band, and didn't, you know, kick me out. Or I remember that's what I was so worried about that. I was like, oh, you guys don't kick me out. And I was crying and apologizing, and they're like, no, don't, like, just go get help. And so I did. And then, you know, the rest is history. And I've been sober ever since. It's been just over 18 months for me.
Yeah.
And it's been incredible. And I got really lucky in getting to get linked up with all these other sober musicians and people that work in the music industry, and just being able to be shown that it is possible to be in this world of rock and roll and be sober and still have a fun time and love yourself and actually have self-respect that I had lost for so long, and just really get shown this new way of life that's truly amazing. And I mean, look, it's brought you and I together. Yep. And it's just super cool.
I've been very open, you know, on my podcast about being in recovery. Usually in a lot of my interviews, you know, because I'm so transparent about it and what it's the journey and what it's done for me. It's like, you know, a lot of strangers I have on here feel comfortable, and then they open up to me about their stories. And, you know, because of that, you know, led me to some of the same groups that I was able to meet you. You know, and it's just amazing, this brotherhood of, you know, it's amazing, like, you know, because I used to be the concert promoter. I never had, like, you know, any musical talent, you know, to play, but I liked being a part of that whole rock, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know, that whole scene.
Yeah.
So let me be a part of it somehow. And this past couple of years, you know, since, you know, I mean, I've been sober for a little while, not working the best program that I should be working, admittedly, but, you know, but just surrounding myself with good people. And like you said, the our group, you know, it's been some of the best times I've had now, where I can wake up every morning now and remember, you know, the sets, you know, and the bands that I heard and the conversations I had. And, you know, it's been awesome, man. And I'm grateful that it was something that brought us together. So I got to experience, you know, you guys when you came through town and hang out with you and go get sushi and all that good stuff and go to, you know, visit Dr. Bob's and, you know,
yeah,
all that cool stuff. But,
dude,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and, you know, I like being transparent and open about, you know, my recovery journey, and in hopes that, you know, if someone out there is having a hard time and it just one person hears this and it can give them hope that they can get help you know, turn their life around and get back on the right path, you know, that's what this thing's all about, you know, is
yeah, exactly. That's how I feel. Like, that's why, you know, when I'm having these conversations, I'm, you know, especially if it's somebody I just met, I'm just like, well, this is me and this is where I'm at. And if they feel comfortable and they open up, you know, and then it's just like, we're having this entirely, like, authentic conversation, you know, with transparency, that whoever the audience is that's out there listening, their fans get to hear something more like authentic and real than, oh, how, you know, when's the next tour? How's the album coming along? You know, the basic stuff you got to hit on usually.
Absolutely. The last thing I'll say about that though, real quick, is, and you know, it was kind of weird. Like the first tour I did sober, it was different. And, but now I love it. Touring sober is fucking so much better. Like I feel good every day. I feel like I play good every day. And I remember everything when I come home, like all the people I met along the way. And it's like getting to do this stuff again for the first time. And it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, dude. I think I texted you a couple times during one of the tours, because, you know, I follow your social media and there's some pictures of you playing and just that smile. And I'm just like, I think I was just like, dude, sobriety looks awesome on you, you know? Dude. And it's it's great to have this, you know, this fellowship and this new way of life. And how much would you say, you know, I mean, you said the first tour was kind of like, wow, you know, and then you realize how awesome it was. But like, how much has your life changed for the better, not just musically, but, you know, personally?
So it's getting dude, I mean, everything's gotten better. I've developed, you know, better relationships with, you know, my bandmates, obviously, and with the people I'm close with at home, you know, my wife and my family. And I've made all sorts of fucking badass friends through recovery that I consider my friends, you know, like I've only known these guys for whatever, the last 18 months, and I know them better than people I've known for 20 years, you know? And it's just, I don't know. It just feels good to truly be alive and living, you know, and actually living my life. And, you know, not every day is perfect. Life's life, you know. I've been through shit, you know, since I've been sober, losing our bass player, Tim. And,
ups and downs. Yeah, I wanted to touch on that because it's like you have had, you know, a new life, but now you've had to experience tragedy probably for the first time, like actually having to feel it and go through it.
Yeah.
You know, and what was that, you know, experience like? And I mean, where do you think you would have been if you didn't have this program and having to go through that?
Oh man. Well, I wouldn't have been present. That's for sure. I would have just stuffed it down and I wouldn't have reached out and be able to be there for other people, because I couldn't even be there for myself. And you know, one thing I learned through this program is just to, now I'm sober, and you know, you can't change, I'm powerless over what happened, and all I can do is be there for others, and by being there for other people makes it so I feel better too. It's like that, you know, it just circles back around. And and it was challenging. I was in disbelief when it first happened. And, it, you know, it took about a day to actually truly process that we had just lost, you know, not only a band member, but one of my best friends. And, you know, it's still is challenging at times. I think it's just always going to be like that. You know, I've lost close friends before, unfortunately. And, you know, some days it's easy and some days it's hard. And it's one of those things. It's like every single night that I am up there playing live, I think about Tim every single night. There's just, but that's cool. Like that's the best fucking way that I could think of to remember someone, you know? Yeah. And they're not, you know, and they're good memories. Like we had good times together. And it's sad and it's fucked and it, you know, but it doesn't have to make sense. You know, we miss him. I miss him dearly. I do like, you know, to tell people how he died, you know, from a fentanyl overdose. And just a reminder about how fucked up fentanyl is. And you just don't know these days what it's in, you know, if you're a recreational drug user or whatever, I mean, you just don't fucking know. And it's scary. And it's just sad that he has to be a example of that, you know. But
yeah,
I know one account of one person, a friend of mine, who got sober right after Tim died because Tim died. And so, you know, it's the harsh reality, but Tim's death at least maybe saved someone else, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, having, you know, what we have now, and I've seen how, you know, how much you've grown and how much you help others. I know you're always there if I need to reach out and talk to you. And, but you know, you dealt with the loss of Tim and you stayed connected with some brothers. You're able to process and feel and grieve yourself as well now in a healthy manner. You guys have also dealt with some other challenges as a band, you know, since Tim. How would you say this whole past like year, because Tim, it was like a year ago, right?
Just it's coming up on a year.
And this past year with everything you guys have had to experience, how would you say it's helped you grow as an individual and help the band kind of strengthen the band relationship?
It's definitely strengthened us a lot. We've had like little things. I mean, we had the big things happen, you know, with our singer, and luckily, you know, that's all sorted. It's bullshit to begin with anyways, but that's all I'm going to say. And, we've had little things happen, you know, since then. And I've literally said like, dude, like our bass player died. This other thing happened. Like we can literally go through anything. Like nothing's ever going to get as bad as it's been. So,
yeah.
So it really makes all the small quality problems seem like absolutely nothing, you know? But dude, like, I mean, we're brothers and we're all fucking committed to this thing. And the way I see it, I'm like, if we can go through all that and still be a band and still be pumping out music and going on tour, fuck. I mean, what's up? We could go through anything.
Yeah, and I can't think of a better way to keep honoring, you know, your friend Tim's legacy by continuing, you know.
Absolutely. And you know, we had the Swan Fest right after he had died. It was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks after he died or something. And we were like, fuck, what do we do? Like, do we still go on tour? And it's like, and we reached out to his parents out of respect, you know, to see if they, what they thought, if they'd be okay. And they were like, of course, go on tour. I mean, he would have wanted you guys to. That's the last thing he would have wanted, is for us to just stop playing music and doing everything, you know. And that's the best way to honor him, exactly like you said, is play every single night. And you know, we looked at, you know, look at ZZ Top when Dusty Baker died, and they were on tour. They took like a night off and then kept going. And because the same thing, they're like, the show must go on. And it's fucking hard. It was very challenging, but you know, we did it for him and for his family and for the fans. And Tim loved our fans, so
yeah. And then like, so Jackpot Juicer, when you guys, that your most recent album, when you guys were, was Tim was a part of that, right? That process?
Yeah.
Still?
Yeah. Audio work.
Okay. And when was that being all put together too? Because it was because I know we talked about the downtime with COVID and everything, but how long has that been in the works? And
so during the downtime with COVID is when we wrote it. And then we went into the studio there like just before that Afterburner tour.
Okay.
But yeah, we had so much time off, and one thing we love to do is write music. So we were like, well, we'll take advantage of not being able to go on tour and get together and write music. And we had so much time, and we just kept writing and writing that we ended up with 17 tracks. So originally, when we went into the studio, we were like, well, 17 songs, like, that's too much. Like, we'll record what we got, and then we'll make some cuts, you know, And then when we heard all the 17 tracks together, we were like, fuck, we can't cut any of this. It has to be all together. That's what makes it the record. So we just rolled 17 songs. Because usually, historically, we will cut a couple songs from albums. Like, there's definitely probably like 10 songs that no one outside of the band has ever heard. Maybe one day we'll put out a B-sides record, but...
Well, you know what I think is like amazing of what you just said too, you know, if you didn't cut one song of those 17 songs you guys recorded together, and then that being the last time you guys got to do all that with Tim, you know, it's like every piece that he contributed got to be shared with everybody too. That's pretty beautiful, you know?
Absolutely. And we're going in 2 weeks from today to start writing a new record. And it's going to be weird. It's going to be weird without Tim, you know, but I think we're all prepared for it. And, you know, we just want to keep our momentum going that we've worked so hard to maintain over the years. And so,
you know, what I'm seeing too with this, you know, the cool thing is this is, what, going to be your first one doing sober, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then with, you know, what the rest of the members of the band have kind of been through, I think, you know, what kind of like focus and creativity is going to be poured out and feelings, you know, are going to be poured into this one. I'm excited for it.
You know? Totally. A lot. I know it's kind of funny because that you mentioned that, because Jackpot Juicer, although when it was released, I was sober. And I have had people like seeing comments where they're like, oh, Matt, you sound great. You could really tell you were sober on this record. And it's like, dude, I was not sober when we wrote or recorded that. I was super fucked up. So thank you. But so I'm really excited to finally actually write and record a record sober and see where it takes me. I'm like a little nervous, you know, because I actually feel feelings now. Yeah. But it's an excited nervous, you know, to see what happens in the writing room and in the studio. So
yeah, I mean, like I said, I did the math in my head with what you shared with me, and I remember that, you know, then you were still obviously using during that, but how awesome this is going to be, you know, where I think, you know, with everything that you, like you said, everything that the band has been through and that not worrying about the minor things, coming together for this album, I'm pumped for you guys. I'm excited to hear what is going to come out of the, it's like, you know, diamonds are formed under pressure, and you guys have been through some pressure the past year, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah. I feel like
nothing but good things are going to come now with this.
Yeah, I think every record we sort of have always felt like we have something to prove, and it's no different for this one. I mean, we got some shit to prove, but we can still do this, but you know, that's not why we do this. Like, we write and make music because we genuinely love it. You know, every single one of us, we love playing music and have passion for it still, and it's that same passion that I had when I was, you know, 16 and starting the band. You know, I still love it just as much. And, you know, like, we're getting older. So sometimes it's like a week before tour and I'm like, oh man, I got to go on tour. Oh, but then it's like, wait a second. I dreamt of this my whole life and I still get to do this. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
then, like, and I get to excited, go on tour.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, well, speaking of getting to go on tour, and now since you've been, you know, experiencing it sober, I mean, I know touring in the States is one thing, but then, you know, touring overseas in Europe and the UK are like kind of what was that for the first time being sober now?
Dude, it was awesome. Yeah, we've been over to Europe. So we didn't go to Europe for like over 5 years, and then now we've already been twice this year. So it's really neat. You know, we've never really caught on over there, and I feel like finally 18 years later, things are starting to happen for us in Europe. But touring over there sober was awesome. We played in Germany and Amsterdam, and it was kind of cool because, you know, I used to go over there and I'd like never even see the sunlight. I'd like party all night and then sleep all day. And now this time we were waking up early. We were going doing hella touristy stuff. Like we went to a lot of museums while we were there this time. And a lot of really cool old cathedrals and just being a tourist. And it was awesome. I loved it. And these are things that I'll actually remember, you know, and I'll remember for the rest of my life versus sitting on a bar stool meeting some weird people somewhere.
Yeah, I've shared this story with just recently with some of my friends. I'm like regretting, you know, when I was, you know, on active duty and we pulled into port and I would make fun of oh, you nerds, they're going to go see the Vatican and stuff like that. You know, I'm going to where the hookers and the alcohol is, but they tell us not to go and hang out. And it's like, you know, all these years later, looking back, like, man, it would have been cool to have checked out the sites and actually did some touristy stuff that didn't involve me like numbing out and, you know, trying to hook up.
Yeah. No, so. It was really cool. And, you know, it was also really awesome on this last tour. We were opening, which we haven't gotten to do over there. And we were opening for Papa Roach and Don Broco. And Don Broco, they're fucking massive over there. They're huge. And, so we were playing stadiums and it was a really, really cool experience. And, we were all super grateful for that tour and being able
to. Yeah, I wanted to ask how that went. Cause that was the one you just recently came back from, right?
Yeah, it was sick, man. So, I always been a massive Papa Roach fan since I was a little kid. I played Between Angels and Insects on guitar at my 7th grade talent show. So like, and I've always wanted to play with them and we never have. So it was so sick to finally get to play with them and watch them every night. And they were so fucking good. And then Don Broco was amazing too. I'll be the first to admit that sometimes I'm a little late to checking out bands, and we toured with Don Broco. We brought him out on tour here in the United States, but I was so far gone in my disease. I fucking didn't really take the time to, you know, give him a listen. And I was thoroughly blown away. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on this podcast, but they are fucking good. And the shows were awesome. And their production was cool. And all their fucking fans were nuts. And it was just fucking cool to see. It was cool.
And that's part of what we can, you know, feel and experience and be a part of now that we're present, you know?
And absolutely.
Clear ahead, dude. I mean, it's like I said, this past, I remember like, you know, I've shared this with my friends before too, when I used to, you know, be really in my disease and I was like promoter or I was just going to shows all the time, you know, here in the local scene and bands I used to think were just, oh, I love these guys because they got me, you know, fucked up, you know, but, yeah. There was a lot of bands that, you know, are always like very cool and wanted to play shows for me. And I'd be like, all right, yeah. And it, you know, hook me up or whatever, you know? And then it's like, then I get sober and I'm listening to some, I'm like, man, you know, why did I like this? You know, but then the other bands you get the experience that you maybe never gave the time of day to, but you're finally hearing their musicianship and the feeling, the energy and the music, you know, it's just like, oh, wow, who are these guys? Oh, they used to, you know, why didn't you check them out before? I'm like, I don't know, dude. You know, well, I do know, but, you know, I wasn't there. Now here I am, you know, and it's been awesome. Take all that stuff in, you know, it's like getting a reset, you know, on how we live.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. And just looking through at stuff and listening to it, you know, through a different lens and some different headphones and it's cool.
Yeah. It's like being able to see the colors, you know, too.
Yeah.
But, So yeah, so then that went well with you guys, and now I think on the horizon you guys got a couple got announced for a couple of the Danny Wimmer festivals.
Yeah, super stoked, man. Pumped to play Louder Than Life. We had to cancel that last year, so we're really stoked that Danny gave us another chance to be on it. And then Aftershock in Sacramento, which is fucking awesome. We played it a few times, but I'm super stoked for Queens of the Stone Age and Rancid and Guns N' Roses, dude, GNR. Yeah. Yeah, so pretty pumped. And then, I can't specifically say anything, but I would imagine that there'll be a tour routed around those dates.
I was thinking the same thing, that, that should happen. But
yeah, we got some, news coming soon. So
awesome. Awesome. So we can't spill it yet here exclusively. Huh?
But I don't know if that's a good enough hint.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good hint. But you guys have played some Danny Wimmer festivals before. It's like, what's your experience been playing those in the past? And, how excited are you guys for the ones you're going to get to play this year?
We love them. It's an honor to work with Danny Wimmer and his whole team. And, he's a big believer in our band, which, as I mentioned before, there's been a lot of people in the industry who were not and who still aren't. But Danny Wimmer, he's always supported us. He partnered with us to do a live stream over the pandemic, and he's really always given us a shot to play his festivals, even though a lot of times we're kind of the odd band out, it's a lot more kind of the radio rock scene, and but he still gives us the opportunity to play and, takes care of us. And it's become a really good, solid relationship and a respectful one for sure.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of his. And I finally got to meet him last year at Incarceration and tell him personally. But, it's like I was going to Rock on the Range because that's here in Columbus, Ohio. And then now he's a part of my buddy Dan Jansen's Incarceration Festival as well. Dude,
I know. I want to play that one. That's the one. I hit up our manager. I was like, dude, we got to play this sometime. So maybe next year we'll get on it.
Yeah, man, it'd be great, because then I'm definitely at those, and ever since like Rock on the Range, it was like, early on in my sobriety, I was able to go do, they put out, they're so professional. The media, especially, in the media tent where I got, my foot in with them, they treat the media very well. And I was experiencing these early on in my sobriety, but I still was dealing with, social anxiety very bad, and stuff going to, so it was like, it'd be tough even in the media tent, trying to have a conversation. That's why I'm blessed. I've had all this time now doing the podcast and facing my fears and getting comfortable, as a sober person. But what I also loved about his festivals, going out and enjoying the bands, but every year, I think Rock on the Range was playing, it was like Armed Forces Day weekend. And he's just very supportive of the military. And being a veteran, that meant a lot to me to see, I got to see Nita Strauss play the Star Spangled Banner and stuff at Rock on the Range. It was amazing. And then he had had the Marines, a full color guard out there behind her. And it was just like, awesome what he does for veterans. I got Danny Hayes introduced me to one of their newest members of the family, he was a Master Chief in the Navy, Master Chief Otis. He introduced me. He's like, you should have him on your podcast, and it was awesome. I connected on so many levels with the Master Chief with my Navy background, but now he's a part of that. And just to hear, and see it visually, like how much they support the military. And I think the first festival back, I believe, after the pandemic was Incarceration and they had pushed it back to September, which was, you know, because of some of the restrictions, the COVID stuff in the state of Ohio. And finally, it was just like, okay, as long as you're, you know, tested and all that stuff, you can come. But it was happened to be on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 weekend. And of course, he did something, you know, he had somebody come out and sing the national anthem, and they had a moment of silence. And after being locked up for so, it was so beautifully done. And after being locked up for so long, everybody was like wild, you know, and having a good time and really letting loose. But then when they had that moment of silence, dude, you could hear a pin drop. People took their hats off, put their hands on their heart. It was just such a beautiful thing that he did. So I got nothing but love for Danny Wimmer and his team, man. And
That's awesome. What a beautiful experience, man.
Yeah, for sure. And I've been wanting to check out Louder Than Life, and just, you know, because, I mean, it's not that far for me to drive down there. But it's always been like, you know, a logistics thing with, you know, getting a place, because everything sells out so quick and everything's so expensive down there, I guess, during the time of the festival. But now that I got a new car, it's a little bit roomier, you know. I might have to make it this year, because, you know, you and a couple of our mutual friends are going to be playing that.
Yeah, so dude. Yeah.
Nice to have a little group session together in person, you know.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, between me or someone else, I'm sure we could get you in and hook you up.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully, you know, just my the people at you know, Danny Wimmer Presents would be cool with it too. So we have a lot of options. Looking but I'm definitely putting it on the calendar of making it happen this year. Come down and see you guys. So like I wanted to ask too, then, you know, you already kind of you know, sounds like there may or may not be some shows in between the festivals, but, and you're getting ready in the next 2 weeks, you said, start recording the new album.
Writing. Right. So okay. We're still a little ways out, but.
Okay. But. So you're not expecting that for, you know, another, probably sometime next year.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it wouldn't come out until the beginning of next year, but.
All right.
I mean, shit starts to happen quick once we start. So we start recording, you know, over summer. So it's
nice.
Right around the corner.
Yeah. And then what other goals do you have, you know, for yourself now going forward?
I don't know, man. I don't really try to shoot too high, honestly. Just stay healthy and happy, and
work the streets.
Yeah, work the streets, dude. Just straight up work the streets, man. I did work the streets for a minute there, so. But yeah, no really goals. Just to keep on trying and grinding away and writing music and just do the best I can and be the best person I can in the process. So.
Yeah, man. It's like. Just try and be a little bit better than the guy I was yesterday, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually, you know, I'm not perfect, but usually it's a good start how I was yesterday. So
yeah,
but like I said, I'm not perfect, man. Sometimes those character defects come out and I'm still very capable of being an asshole. So
you and me both, man, you and me both. Like I was sharing with you the other night. I still, you know, it's like that, yep. Self-will, you know, comes up and I still know better, you know, but all I can say, man, is like, you know, from the moment we first locked, you know, kind of virtually met to today, you know, it's just been awesome watching your growth and your commitment and, you know, becoming your friend and, you know, it's been a cool journey. And that, like you said, by you doing you and doing what you're doing, you know, we help each other out, because you guys inspire the hell out of me. I might, you know, technically have more time, but you know, it's I still get so much inspiration from so many of the new people, you know, because it reminds me, it's like, okay, I'm getting complacent and I need to pick that fire back up that this guy has, you know? And
yeah, definitely.
You know, and that gratitude every day, you know, for sure. But I wanted, before we get ready to wrap up, I wanted to ask you some of the questions that I normally ask guests that I have on.
Yeah, dude.
Now you mentioned some of your early influences in music, but who would you say today are your top three bands?
Okay, I love the Strokes. Love the Strokes, right? Like right now I'm going through a huge phase with them. I love that band Dredge. They don't really do anything anymore, but they've always been a huge influence for me. And I just still, it's funny because my musical taste and the things I listen to, it's been the same shit for the last 20 years. You know, I need to check out new music. Obviously, I mentioned the Deftones. I was just trying to think of something more unique.
I'm looking forward to seeing them because they're playing the Sonic Temple here in Columbus. And I don't think I've ever had the opportunity to see them live yet, you know? So I'm looking forward to seeing them for sure.
I've seen them live a good handful of times, and they're fucking great.
You mentioned a little bit about, your journey in high school and how, you know, you were off, you know, with the band and stuff, but what class do you feel should be mandatory before graduating today?
Shit. You know, none. No, I'm just kidding. I wish something that really piques my interest now, and it didn't when I was younger, and I really wish I would have paid more attention, is history.
Yeah.
And I'm really into history stuff of a lot of different eras, but I think history is pretty important, especially, you know, U.S. history and where we come from, and it's a rich history. There's lots of ugly shit that has happened in this country over the years, but also lots of beautiful things, so I'd have to say, yeah, history.
Yeah, great. And there's so much, you know, we can learn from, like what not to go back to and what to continue to do to get better, you know, when we know our history. So I agree with that. It's definitely important. And then who are three people who've inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today?
Well, when it comes to music, I always love to mention my 7th grade and 8th grade band teacher, Mr. Roberts, Jay Roberts. He was a professional drummer on top of being the band instructor, and he really inspired me to play. And, I got to give the credit to my parents. It's just been awesome having the support and relationship that I have with them. And, we're super close still to this day, and they've never given up on me. And I'm just really lucky to have them in my life and the rest of my family for that matter, you know, both my sisters, super supportive and loving. And, I'm just truly blessed with an amazing family. And of course my wife, I can't leave my wife out of the equation. She's, you know, she's my, my biggest cheerleader, you know, and everything that I do, and I'm just really lucky to have her.
It's awesome, man. And then are there any causes or organizations that you support and encourage others to check out?
I am a huge donor for the DW Music Foundation. DW Drums, they have a foundation that helps, like underprivileged kids play music and get into music. And I've supported them for the last few years, and it's a really good cause. And Yeah, that's the main one that I usually push.
And then I think we talked a little bit about it at the beginning, but favorite toy as a child?
Legos, dude. I've always been a huge Lego head, blockhead, brickhead, whatever you want to call it. I, to this day, still build Legos.
Nice.
I have a whole collection. It's sometimes I feel like I'm like, man, I'm this 34-year-old man just playing with my Legos. What has my life become? But I love that shit.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. Well, I mean, you know, inspires creativity and focus and,
yeah,
you know, some therapeutic sides to playing with Legos. And then any message that you have for our military members currently serving overseas?
I just always like to thank them for their service, you know. If I didn't find my way into music, I feel like I probably would have found my way into the military. We're just blessed and honored to have people like them willing to go out and sacrifice their time and unfortunately sometimes their lives to protect our country and our freedoms. And it's just amazing to have those people. So thank you.
Awesome. Matt, dude, I'm glad we were able to finally make this happen and, you know, get together on here. Now for any of my audience members that may not be familiar with Dance Gavin Dance and getting to know you and the band for the first time and want to know more and check it out and see what tour schedule might be popping up and stuff like that, where would you send them?
You know, I'm an Instagram guy, so over to the Dance Gavin Dance Instagram. We do utilize all the other stuff, but I know like our Reddit page is pretty big and always a lot of information on there, but keep an eye on Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram seems to be the one that's the one I've been following. Like I said, I saw those pictures and sent you that text because you guys got a good tour photographer that goes with you guys out there too, you know.
Yeah, Matt Cole, we linked up with him a few years ago and he does a great work for us. We love having him on the road with us.
Nice. Well, Matt, thank you so much for the time. And, you know, you're a brother, man. I love you. And I'm glad, you know, we got to talk today. And I'm glad that I get to talk to you, you know, every day, any day I need to, you know. It's been awesome.
Yeah, man.
Walk this journey with you. And like I said, man, you continue to inspire me.
Dude, definitely, man. And, you know, I know it's one day at a time, but you know, here's to many more days as friends. So,
amen. And then one last favor before I let you go. You mind cutting a promo ID for the show? Just introduce yourself and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Yeah, of course. Just tell me when.
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
Hey, what's up, guys? Matt Mingus here from Dance Gavin Dance, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Awesome. Matt, thank you so much, brother. I'm glad we were able to make this happen today.
Dude, of course, man. I'm super glad that we made it happen too, finally. And good luck with your next one with Pinfield a little later today.
Thanks, brother. Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you real soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Later.
Incarceration Music and Tattoo Festival is back July 14th through 16th at Ohio State Reformatory with Slipknot, Limp Bizkit, Pantera, plus Full Beat, Megadeth, Lamb of God, In This Moment, Highly Suspect, and more. Passes on sale now as low as $10 down at incarceration.com. Incarceration.
So come and get it.
Get it.
Brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
The first time that we went over to the Mathers,
here's
$20 invited us over because we're going to work on the Mathers in advance, get it up and running. And,
we should
and,
be good for a little bit.
Get it well, ready for people to come on board.
I'll keep the 1975.
There you go. Smart
girl. I like the way you're thinking.
So it was so freaking cold out. There's no heat on this thing or nothing.
Oh, yeah.
So we're walking around, checking the place out. All of a sudden, I got to take this gigantic shit.
Oh, I remember
so
that day.
I'm walking around a place like, oh my god. So I go into this stateroom, and I can't take it anymore. I got to shit, or I'm going to shit my pants.
Is that
a
wooden stateroom?
Oh, yeah, right? Real nice, ornate wood and everything. So I find this rag, and I'm like, so I drop my pants,
toilet, huh?
And I take, no, nothing working. So I take this giant shit in a rag, clean myself up, you know, and so I fold it up like a little piece of wedding cake, and I set it on this shelf, you know. Well, who's the first one to walk in? Mike walks in, you know, and he's looking around. He's like, "Oh, it's really nice in here," you know. Yeah,
smells like
and,
shit.
And he's like, you know, I'm like, Mike, what's that?
Tiger Woods get a
he's like,
one.
I don't know. I'm like, well, what is it? You know, here he is. He's like, the humanity.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news and information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for supporting, sharing, and tuning into today's Boondoggle.